You're listening to Face Off, episode 46, recorded December 6th, 2009. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we'd like to talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, so we have kind of another special episode again this week and next week. It's kind of a two-parter. We're going to be talking about CMSs. We're not talking about enterprise level CMSs. We're talking about sort of your average, small to mid-sized business CMSs.
Content management system for managing your content.
All right. But before we do that, we have to do our web apps. Okay. So the first web app we have this week is called freemypdf.com. What this web app does is it removes restrictions and various other things that people set up in their PDFs.
Nothing worse than getting a PDF and you go to hit the print button and it says, sorry, this PDF does not allow printing. And you're like, what? I don't want to read on the screen.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, I understand why some of these guys put these restrictions on them and stuff, but it's just, you know, not my thing.
Some of the restrictions are like copying text. I mean, they don't want you to copy the text and like put it on a blog or something. But sometimes when people highlight text and use it for screen readers and different things like that as well. I know some PDF viewers have screen readers built in, but
So this PDF you cannot unlock the password protect on them, right? Okay. So some PDFs they have like a password protect. It will not do that. Like if you have to put a password in just to view it, this cannot do that.
Okay, but even if you supplied the password,
yeah, it does not do that.
Okay,
but any of those other, sort of silly restrictions, it will take care of for you.
Wait, it says use this site to remove passwords and restrictions.
Yes, PDFs that require a password to be viewed cannot be unlocked by this service.
Oh, but if
to view them.
Okay. But to print it or something, then it's got that feature. Okay.
Which is nice. I think that's stupid. That kind of makes me mad. That, I don't know. It's sort of immoral, right? I mean, the person who created the content, such as the PDF, really has a right to say no, they don't want you to print it. Mm-hmm. But then if you're really concerned about it, then maybe you shouldn't just use the PDF protection because obviously things like this can remove it.
Yeah, this is kind of like the software protection, like interpreted languages that are not compiled. A lot of times people go to great lengths to encrypt it or obfuscate the code. It's like maybe you should change the way your service works or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. One of the apps we're going to talk about to connect to your MySQL database saves it in clear text in a text file on the hard drive, which makes some people nervous. It makes me nervous. It makes a lot of people nervous. And sometimes people won't use some of these apps for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So check it out. freemypdf.com if you want to get rid of those printing and copying restrictions so that you can use your PDFs the way you want. The next web app we want to talk about is a list of mnemonics. What is a mnemonic, Martin?
A mnemonic is the art of assisting the memory by using a system of artificial aids, whether it be rhymes, rules, phrases, diagrams, acronyms, or any other device. One common one that a lot of people know is if you hold out your two knuckles, starting from the left represents each bump and valley of your knuckles represents the months in a year. And so your pinky knuckle on the left finger is like January, and then the next one would be February. You know that February does not have 31 days.
Mm-hmm.
That one's the only weird one. And then you have March, which does have 31, and then April 30 kind of deal as you go down the humps and valleys.
Clever. So just little ways to help you remember. I mean, they have a ton of them on here.
Yeah, like the order of the planets, the bones in the body, all kinds of stuff. Obviously the ones that a lot of people know, too, is like the drinking alcohol ones, like beer on whiskey, very risky, or liquor after beer, you're in the clear, or beer after liquor, never been sicker.
Yeah.
Those ones, of course.
So all kinds of cool ones. There's chemistry ones, all kinds of fun stuff to help you remember those things that we have trouble with. There's a ton of math ones. Oh, my goodness.
Here's a good one, too. I remember a red sky at night, shepherd's delight, or sailor's delight. But a red sky in the morning is sailors take warning.
Mm.
Things like
that. Yeah, got to be careful. All right. Well, there.
It's so there's like a humongous list of all these mnemonics on remembering things, and so
totally.
And there's some really good ones.
Yeah. So check them out. I mean, there's whether I'm not sure if you want to go here to try and find a specific one. If you're like, oh, I want to remember this thing. How do I? Let's go find. But if you're just looking for fun little things to remember, like there's a lot of them for elephants. Weird. Ow.
There's a Monopoly section on like memorizing like how much money to give out and stuff.
Wow.
Income taxes and all the purple. Oh, man.
Ohm's Law for physics, the spectrum. So check it out. It's a pretty cool little website. You know, not very pretty, to be honest with you, but gets the job done. All right, so we want to remind you guys if you have any web apps or news and follow-ups for us on something that we've talked about in the past that might have a follow-up, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us know.
Yep.
All right, so let's get into the sort of the big daddy we got here, which is content management systems, this sort of mid-level, small to mid-level content management systems. There's a lot of big enterprise level ones that we can't even hit because you have to have a ridiculous license to even try them, and they're just not for us. So the first thing we want to do is, you know, like, what is a CMS?
Well, I guess I'll read the Wikipedia definition of a CMS, and I'll kind of, you know, my own take on it. A CMS is a collection of procedures used to manage workflow in a collaborative environment. These procedures can be manual or computer-based. The procedures are designed to, and it goes on, you know, to allow a large number of people to contribute, control access to the data based on user roles, aid the storage and retrieval of the data, reduce repetitive duplicate input, improve the ease of report writing, and improve communication between users.
Okay, so, I mean, boil that down. You have content. Right. You know, each website on your each page in a website, you know, is content. There's lots of content. Blogs are content. Web pages are content.
A front page is a collage of different pieces of content. Totally.
And these are obviously content managers. They help you manage that in a, you know, supposedly supposed to be an easier way than just having it and owning it.
Yep. Typically, the goal online is to allow people that are not programmers to be able to, you know, people like writers, whether it be a blogger or, you know, somebody that works for, you know, a publication, to sit down and write a story, insert maybe a few images and links and things, and then hit publish and or maybe like set a time when it wants to be published. And then it shows up on the page.
Yeah.
No programming involved.
Totally. So normally it's like, all right, I have to write a new page. I'd have to go, you know, FTP into the folder. I have to write a new HTML page, maybe go through all the old ones, you know, change, you know, let's say you want to just change the name of one page. You have to go through all the other pages, you know, change the link and stuff like that. This does all that for you. It manages your content holistically and takes care of it in an easy way that, you know, doesn't require a lot of process and doesn't require a lot of technical knowledge.
Yeah, and oftentimes they have, you know, techniques like revision control where you can revert the article if something, you know, you messed up something, and automatic save features, and then access lists and things. So you can say you can edit the pages, but you can't, like, control these other main pages.
Yeah, so that kind of gets into the workflow aspect of it, which is, you know, instead of just giving, you know, having, let's say, one programmer who has access to the web page who has to take care of putting and managing all your content, it allows you to do workflows like, you know, this person... Why should they shouldn't be able to post content in this part of the web page, right? So I'm not going to let them, you know, it's going to take care of that for you.
Yeah. And some of the advantages, you know, you can get somebody that's not a programmer to be able to sit down and create content for a web page. That's one. You can have multiple people working on different articles at the same time. You don't have to like send your articles to your web guy and have him type them up or copy and paste them in and, you know, make a design. You reduce the amount of, repetitive stuff that you have to put into the system. Like, you don't have to design a new template for this article each time. It's already there. You just need the text, images, and links, you know, and put them up.
Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners have at least in one point or another done this sort of old way of managing your content, which is, you know, maybe you have like a blank HTML page with your template, and then you have to go add it, and you have to go add the link to everything, and, you know, you sort of advance as you get better, but now we have these systems that do it for you.
Yep. And
so, I mean, it seems like this is great. Why wouldn't anyone use this?
Well, some of the criticisms are, you know, usability. Some of the ones that we're going to talk about are just really hard to just kind of grasp the idea of how they work. the actual editing and stuff isn't bad, but like linking pages together and adding navigation and making categories and putting them under it can get really hairy.
It's very daunting, yeah.
And for example, according to the Interaction Design and Information Architecture program at the University of Baltimore, Drupal lacks an intuitive, easy administration user interface. Mm-hmm. They wrote a big report on Drupal and how the interface was just not good.
And so then it kind of makes you wonder, like, well, what is better, using a content management system or using not using a content management system, or using one that is a really big pain to learn and use? Because for a lot of non-technical people, I mean, figuring if the management system itself is not intuitive, it's the same learning curve of junk to them. You know, it serves no help.
Mm-hmm. It seems like they start off, you know, wanting to make it easier, and they make a system and it works, and then somebody's like, well, I would like to be able to add the feature to add this to this menu navigation, or I want this page to be promoted to the top, or I want this one to be front page, but this one not to be front page, and all of a sudden you have like a page with 100 drop downs of and radial buttons of options you can choose for each piece of content.
Yeah,
and it can become a real nightmare as far as the user interface.
Totally.
Which leads to the next thing is most of these do have a learning curve, not only for the developer, but for also the user that's going to be using the system.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, whether it be the article, the author, or the business guy that's posting in the pages.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, there's going to be a learning curve. But what you want to do is hope that the learning curve of learning the CMS is, you know, not as steep as learning, you know, raw HTML and how to manage a website itself.
Of course. The next concern is a security concern. A lot of these have been known to have vulnerabilities that have. Mm-hmm. The main thing is it's a large attack surface. What happens is, you know, like for one of them that we're going to talk about has 202 million websites installed with this software. So it's huge. I mean, if a hacker can find a vulnerability in one version of this, he can potentially affect 202 million websites.
Totally.
So that's one thing to be concerned about. But of course, we've also known that open source software tends to be more secure in the long run as more eyeballs get to check it out and more people are hacking at it. I mean, there are people daily trying to break into this stuff.
Totally. And with, you know, 222 million?
202 million.
202 we'll million.
We'll talk about that one's our first one.
That means a lot of there's a large user base, which probably means there's a large base of people who are just behind it in general. So things get picked up quickly. You know, if someone who is working on one of these systems happens to be, a programmer for a big company, and he knows if the big company that he suggested use the CMS, if they hear that there's a big vulnerability for it that didn't get fixed quickly, then he's in hot water. So it's a good ecosystem. Yeah.
And many of the problems can be mitigated by making sure you're up to date. And that's one of the things if you're going to run one of these CMS systems, you're going to definitely want to be up to, up to date with the latest version. We've seen this similar, like PHBB, the web forums.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen them where if it's like two versions out, there's so many vulnerabilities that it's just totally full of spam. You got to like delete it and replace the forum. But
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit about them. We could now dive into the big three.
Yeah, we call these the big three because people have heard about them a lot. The big three are WordPress, Joomla, and Drupal.
Yep.
So the first one we're going to talk about is WordPress, which is, I think, easily Mark and I's favorite. I mean, this a clear. I don't want to say bias. It's not like WordPress is paying us, but it's very clear which ones you and I like.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, you and I have made the same evaluation of these big three and decided which one works best for us.
Yeah. Even though I have used Drupal and looked at Joomla in the past, before we did this episode, we sat down and tried to use all of them.
Yeah.
For at least a short period of time. And we've come to some conclusions about some of these.
So, okay. So let's talk about WordPress. Right. WordPress is huge. It's all over the internet. People use it. I mean, I love WordPress. I think it's great. It started out as a blogging software that just eventually became so flexible and usable that it's, you know, used by people who aren't blogging at all. Mm-hmm. It's one of the problems with WordPress I've noticed sometimes when you talk to people and you say, well, you need a CMS. I really think you should use WordPress. They say, well, I'm not a blogger. Why do I want WordPress? And it's not just blogging software anymore. I mean, it's a really sort of powerful CMS system.
Yeah, WordPress is by far the most used CMS. It has 202 million websites, and the plugin database is just outnumbers anything in comparison.
Plugin and themes. I mean, there are so many plugins and themes for WordPress. It is ridiculous.
So like you said, it started off as like a blogging platform, but the amount of plugins and things you can have, you can potentially get WordPress to do almost anything you want. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can act as a full CMS.
Yeah, I mean, you can work within the plugin ecosystem, or its backend is really documented, so you can create templates that use the WordPress system that aren't really even using plugins, but you can use, you know, you can play with the backend a little bit, mm-hmm. or you can even, it's PHP, and it's extremely well-written PHP, too. That's another thing. If you want to hack at these, WordPress is good code. I've said this before, and I think that if I was, you know, writing sort of a best practices for PHP code, I would tell people to look at anything automatic, the people who make WordPress, right, because it's good code. You can dig into it and you can understand it. Which some of the other ones, I think it was Joomla, I've heard from a couple people, and I think I've definitely seen this from Drupal. It's hard to get under the hood. Mm. I mean, it's just difficult.
Yeah. I remember one time I was making a website and I wanted to have URLs automatically change in the database mm-hmm. to where, you know how like WordPress has it, like if you put an article title, it'll automatically take out commas and things and put mm-hmm. hyphens and make it URL friendly. I went through their code and I found the code that does that, and it is awesome. And so I took it out and used it in my own project.
Totally.
And I know what you're saying when you say it's got really nice code, because whenever I'm like, man, I wonder how WordPress handles this.
Yeah.
I go in there and I'm like, oh, that's clever. Totally. And then I just copy the code and adapt it to my own needs. So.
Totally. And that's one of the reasons I think it has been adopted, is because it's got really good ease of use. And it's just so easy to hack and play around with. I mean, there's WordPress hacking websites. There's, you know, with blogs with like a snippet of code every day. You know, I subscribed to a couple of those. And honestly, just the back end is really easy to use. I recently created a website for my dad, and I was really blown away at how easy the learning curve is on the back end of WordPress. I mean, just for basic functionality. Let's say you just want to go and blog. Mm-hmm. Really easy to get and pick up. If you just want a website, you know, pages are identical to blogging. It's really easy to use. Mm-hmm. And then if you want, there's a lot of advanced functionality that you can get in and tinker with. You and I have played a lot with this. I mean, mm-hmm. it powers, you and I probably have what, between us, 6-7 websites using WordPress.
Yeah, there's the big names are like TechCrunch, Yahoo, their blog, eBay, CNN, Mozilla, Face Off Show.
That's where a big you name.
Go to get this.
yeah. I mean, we were like, well, how do we make a podcast? Well, let's go look for a WordPress plugin. Boom, podcast plugin.
Automatically uploads to iTunes, so you have the feeds totally. Automatically.
And so security-wise, this is the best part about WordPress that they've implemented in the past two versions, is the automatic upgradeability. It used to be kind of a pain. They had kind of a user interface for it where you could give the application FTP access and it would go take mm-hmm. care of it. But now it's like within the app, if the web browser can overwrite files, then you go in and it tells you if there's an update, there's a bar at the top letting you know. Because WordPress has come out publicly and said the best way to secure WordPress is to update it. We are totally. On top of things. If something is out there, you need to just upgrade it. We'll take care of it. And they've made it really easy. You log in, big red bar at the top saying you're outdated, click here to upgrade. You go there, you click the button, you know, boom, done.
Yeah, before I was a Git fan, I was a big Subversion fan, and that's how I upgraded.
That was the easiest way to.
It was easier back then, but now with this automatic upgrade, it is just, there's no reason not to be up to date with the Absolutely. Latest versions. And the other thing is, if you are hacking at it, might as well stay up to version, and if that version breaks, at least you're not like holding out for like four versions and then trying to do an upgrade and then stuff breaks, because then you got to figure out what mm-hmm. what broke between the four different versions.
Well, yeah.
So keep upgrading all the time.
Totally. And some problem people have had in the past too is plugin compatibility. But they also have now the ability that your plugins keep track of how updated they are and where they are. So when there's a new version of the plugin, it lets you know you go and upgrade it. So like a lot of times in the past, it was a big pain with WordPress to go like, oh man, I don't know if I want to upgrade. It might break my podcasting plugin. But being it's so easy for people to upgrade now too, plugin developers are so much more on the ball than they used to be, because they know it, a lot of people know immediately that their plugin isn't working in the new version, and they can easily create an update and pipe it out to everyone who's using their plugin, and they can upgrade it through the UI in the back end. Mm-hmm. It, I mean, once you install it, it requires zero technical knowledge to use. You can install plugins via a web interface. You can install themes via a web interface. You can install it and set it for someone, and they'll never have to talk to you again. They can upgrade and manage their application all within it.
Yeah, it used to be you had to like go to the author's plugin page to go get the upgrade, and then FTP it up and then upgrade it. But now they made it so easy. Another thing I wanted to say is that hosting, I mean, almost all the hosts allow one-click installs for this. So, absolutely. I mean, it's, yeah. And then it's, you just go browse, throw a theme in there, and you're ready to go.
Yeah.
It's the way to go.
Totally.
For, well, I mean, is there any downsides of WordPress?
Well, like you said, being there is so many people using it, there is a lot of people who find it easy to exploit it. There's a big problem with comment spam, but again, Automattic is helping you out using a service called Akismet they have,
mm-hmm.
That I think does an excellent job moderating spam. But if you don't use that, then yeah, you're going to get a lot of comment spam. People know how to get around WordPress. It's so mm-hmm. popular. And there's so many bots out there looking just for WordPress, just to try and do things to it. But like they said, if you keep it up to date, you're usually pretty secure.
Mm-hmm. And they've got some tricks to third-party things that people have come up with to limit that kind of stuff. That's mm-hmm. the advantage of having 202 million people running it.
Absolutely.
They're frustrated with the spam as much as you are. And so
absolutely.
The job gets done.
Yeah, I mean, there's bigger blogs out there than yours and I's, and they really don't want spam either, because it's a lot more work for them to take care of it.
So like you said, this one was originally for blogging, and it's hard to get that state of mind out of people's, you know,
totally.
When you go to talk to somebody about this and say, oh, we're thinking about using WordPress, they're like, well, isn't that for a blog?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's hard to overcome, isn't it? I mean, you've had to deal with that.
It is, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, it happens anytime I mention it as a CMS, they go, well, I'm not blogging. And it is, and I think the more, you know, the problem is when it's a blog, it's really easy to tell it's WordPress. Mm-hmm. You can almost smell WordPress when you go to a blog. You kind of go and you're like that looks, this feels like WordPress, you know, the way the comments are formatted and stuff, you know. But when it's just a page without a blog, it's really hard to tell, because the templating mm-hmm. is so flexible and useful that, I mean, there's no way. You can't even tell. The only way you may be able to tell is if people have, you know, set up good permalinks at the top for their pages, which, you know, they could have done themselves or with any of these other CMSs.
Yeah, one tip I would say is go to the WordPress.org website and click on Showcase, and it'll show some example sites that are using it. And some of these, like the University of Maine, they're using it as just their front webpage and not like a necessarily just a blog. And so you can kind of get the idea of the flexibility of this. I mean, some of these pages look like blogs, and some of them just look like a regular page. You would have no idea.
Totally. And there's so many helpers and blogs and little apps out there and stuff to help you design a WordPress template. Because really, if you're going to use it as CMS, that's almost the key. If you want to make it truly unique, is you have to create a template for it. But there's a lot of resources out there to help you with that. And I mean, I find it really easy. I'm getting into some of the more advanced stuff, which you know would require you to hire someone if you weren't, you know, if you're a company. But as far as just if you wanted to hire even a graphic designer who has basic HTML knowledge, could read a couple of these tutorials and make a template really easily.
Mm-hmm. And it was funny you mentioned that the code like was really, you know, quality code when you said you were going to look. I mean, if you were to write a book about PHP best practices, their tagline is like, code is poetry. They take totally. Their code very serious, and they really try to make it very clean and easy to understand, even not just for themselves internally, but for everyone to work with it.
Yeah, and it's great to see a company like this really, they have a great business model. They're contributing to the open source community with a great piece of software, but their business model is to use that software and host it for people in a simple and easy way that they want to pay for like a pro account. And, you know, this sort of WordPress.com is fueling this great app like WordPress. Because mm-hmm. if it doesn't work in WordPress, it doesn't work for WordPress.com. And that's their business.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they're making their money. Oh, so
we really like WordPress.
We like WordPress.
It kind of shows.
I mean, it's going to show, because the next two we want to talk about are Drupal and Joomla. And the truth is, there's been two or three times, let's say, between the two of them that I've said, all right, Jade, you need to learn Joomla. You know, it's time to step it up a notch. And every time I just can't get into it. I find these both to be really confusing.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of the quote that we read at the beginning about the user interface being clunky and hard to manage. I think that really sets it off. I mean, we were sitting down with it, trying to learn it, adding menus and adding content and changing and moving the content from this category to the other one. It just seemed there's just so many checkboxes and so many drop downs. And
yeah, it just seems really daunting. And the truth is they're very powerful CMSs. They WordPress sort of takes this, this is how we do it, make your templates and your plugins accordingly sort of step, right? Mm-hmm. It only allows so much, you know, complexity initially. You can get into some really deep, dark stuff with WordPress if you want. But I feel like Joomla and Drupal say, we're going to give you all that complexity to start with, and it's very daunting. I mean, I like the fact that WordPress is like, here's your homepage, here are pages. Let's say, we're not even talking blogging, let's just manage regular content, right? Here are your pages, here are your files that you've uploaded to put in a page. You know, it's very straightforward, I think. Pages, and then you can have subpages. I think like that. Pages, subpages. Mm-hmm. And then with each of them, it's just, here's your box of content. And if you want to put other things, plugins and whatnots, you can either do it through your template or through plugins.
Yeah, I think they're basically trying to put the flexibility of a programmer into the hands of somebody that doesn't know programming and trying to bridge that. It's like saying, I want to be able to do anything I want, but I don't want to learn programming. Yeah. So instead of programming languages, you get like this huge array of radio boxes and dropdowns.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we should talk about some of the differences. The big difference to me is that Drupal, you edit the content in place, and Joomla, you log into a backend to do it.
Okay.
So, like, with Joomla, you go into the, you know, Joomla backend, which is just like WordPress, and then go and edit all your content and stuff there. With Drupal, it's like you go to your page, you log in as a user, and then it kind of puts in all these, you know, sort of UI overlays for the stuff that you can change and edit.
Okay.
But both sort of share the same philosophy, right? Content should not be one-dimensional, right? WordPress is very one-dimensional. You have a title and kind of your chunk of content, and then you within, you know, HTML and its editor, you can add little things in between. But it's, you know, title, content. Drupal and Joomla are very, you know, what type of content chunk are you going to put in this page? Mm-hmm. Do you want a calendar in this page? Do you want forums on this page? Do you want, you know, a rotating slider bar up in the corner? And then do you want, you know, mm-hmm. So it sets up kind of like columns filled with modules of specific things. One of the modules is straight content, but then there's a ton of other ones.
Yeah, I think the way, I mean, it's got like an article or page, if you want to call it, and then they have like blocks of content. So you can have multiple blocks inside of a certain page.
Yeah.
And then like menu systems are blocks of content as well.
Yeah.
And getting kind of, should we mention some of the big names before we, I mean, there's some big companies that are using this stuff.
I mean, absolutely. You and I, just like we said, we don't really like it, but there's a lot of people out there using them and they're very relevant. These are very relevant, very popular CMSs. I mean, WordPress is the most popular, but these two are right behind it. People really like them. Yeah. Just not you and I.
Just because we don't like them doesn't mean there's something behind them. I mean, there's so many people behind it that it's something to look at for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, so who's using Drupal?
You know, Barak just, you know, made this open, you know, the open source movement on the Webhouse, or the Webhouse, the whitehouse.gov website, and they're using Drupal now, as well as theeconomist.com and ubuntu.com.
Nice.
I mean, we all know. Ubuntu, but it's Ubuntu.
Ubuntu, yeah, I say Ubuntu, so whatever.
But so they're using it, and then for Joomla, we got LA Weekly, which is they got content all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's
what they do is content.
And I guess one could say that, let's say, WordPress kind of works for small to medium businesses, but I would say Joomla and Drupal are, you know, for medium sized businesses who really want to step it up. Maybe are starting to transcend into that bigger level. It's not, you know, enterprise level, but, you know, a fairly large business. It has a learning curve, but once you learn that learning curve, it's very powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go to a Drupal website and you don't tend to smell Drupal or smell Joomla. They're so, you know, advanced and customizable that you can't really tell that.
Right. Like, I'm looking at the White House site right now, and it looks like a professional hand-done website.
Yeah, totally.
It does not look like it's any kind of CMS or cookie-cutter type page.
Totally. Again, though, but Drupal and Joomla both have very big communities behind them. So there's a lot of resources. Similar to WordPress, not quite as much as WordPress, because WordPress, I mean, is really all over the place. But these guys have a lot of people following them, and people who... It's like a step up from WordPress if you want that sort of flexibility and complexity built in without having to rely on plugins or, you know, a really fancy template. Like if I wanted to design a template for WordPress that did a lot of fancy stuff, I'm fully capable of doing that, but it's very difficult too. And it would cost, you know, in time wise, a lot of money for me to really dig in enough to do some of the really advanced stuff that Joomla and Drupal can do straight out of the box.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm reading here, too, is they both use kind of the model view controller style of development. So, like, you have your templates separate from the actual code functions. Mm-hmm. And so the idea with that is you can, you know, as we know, we've talked about MVCs before, you can, keep them separate and extend maybe the functionality in the back end and then change the view later. Or,
totally.
You know, things like that.
I mean, I think the big difference is that Drupal and Joomla are a step up. And the truth is, I haven't felt the need yet to commit to learning one of these. There is a learning curve to administering these. Mm-hmm. You know, arguably, I'm not really, I wouldn't say that I would be a user of one yet, but it does take a commitment to learn, you know, how to administer and use these properly. And it just hasn't hit me yet that I need to do that. For me, WordPress does what I want, but Drupal and Joomla, there are definitely people out there who have a need for this. And so for, I mean, a great example is like LA Weekly. I'm sure they fielded requests from, or, you know, they looked at big enterprise level ones that you have to pay for and decided that, you know, Joomla is powerful enough to do what they need to do and be open source. So, you know, mm-hmm. we'd rather pay someone to be a Joomla expert than pay for software and support from another company. Mm-hmm. And in the end, you know, they have a very powerful CMS system that looks great. Same with like the White House and the Economist. You know, they have this, you know, they made that conscious decision. They're big enough to use some of these big enterprise level CMSs that are out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they said that these, you know, and they proved that Joomla and Drupal are powerful enough to handle big websites like this.
Definitely.
I just think that a lot of businesses don't need that sort of functionality. All right. So I want you guys to come back next week. We're going to talk about some of the off-the-grid CMSs. We talked about the big three here, and then we're going to talk about some of these fun, kind of little groovy ones that we found off the beaten path. So make sure you come back and listen for that. I want to remind you guys, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. There's all kinds of ways you can subscribe there. And let us know what you think of the show and what we're talking about. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You know, give us a shout-out, and we will talk to you guys next week.